I want to say hi to everybody, every venue, folks joining us online from all over the place. I hope you had a fabulous Thanksgiving. What a great time to talk about God's dream for the human race, that there be a world without walls, no walls between us and God, no walls between us and each other. That's why we're here. I want to tell you a phrase that you never read in the Bible, and here's the phrase. Where do you go to church? In fact, this is kind of interesting. There's no place in the Bible that actually says you should go to church. And there is a real important reason for this. Doesn't mean you should stop going to church. In the time when the New Testament books were written, nobody thought about calling a building a church. They didn't even have any buildings for church people to gather at then. They just had people. And so the people were the church. A strange thing happened over the centuries. What used to be the name of the people became the name of a building. Sometimes in our day, people will look at a building where church people gather and say, you have a beautiful church. See, to early Christians, that would make no sense. To early Christians, that would be like somebody in our day looking at a crib and saying, you have a beautiful baby. No. A baby is people. A crib is the thing. A crib is just a place where you put the baby. And you don't even put the baby there all the time. You just put the baby in there so that they can rest up and recharge to go back in the world. The world is where the action is. A baby was made for the world. Baby loves being in the world. If you have a baby, would you want it in the crib 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? Well, if you're exhausted right now, maybe you would, but that's not what the baby was made for. Welcome to the crib. Another phrase you never read in the Bible is, hey, how was church today? People ask that sometimes in our day, usually on a Sunday, how was church today? Usually that means, how did a particular service go? How did a particular hour go? How was the music today? Was it your kind of music? Did you like it? Or how did the sermon go? How much did you like the talk? By the way, how's the sermon going so far? Is it going okay? Church going okay? So what happens, see, we get way off on this, is we measure church by how is that one little group of people on that one little platform, in that one little building, during that one little hour, how are they doing? We get so messed up. And this tendency to compartmentalize, to restrict the church to a particular place at a particular time, crops up over and over again, and God never likes it. It wasn't his idea. In fact, a real good question to ask is, where does God think church is? And how does God think church went today? After all, the whole church thing was God's idea. And as it turns out, there actually is a passage in the Bible that talks about this very directly, and it's going to be critical, pivotal for us as we go forward being a church without walls. I got to warn you, it's a very challenging passage, very challenging set of words. It's from a prophet named Isaiah, and God gave this prophet Isaiah a message to give to his people. Tell my people what's wrong with their lives. Face my family Jacob with their sins. They're busy, busy, busy at worship and love studying all about me. To all appearances, they're a nation of right-living people, law-abiding, God-honoring. They ask me what's the right thing to do and love having me on their side. But they also complain, why do we fast and you don't look our way? Why do we humble ourselves and you don't even notice? Well, here's why. The bottom line on your fast days is profit. You drive your employees much too hard. You fast, but at the same time, you bicker and fight. You fast, but you swing a mean fist. Do you call that fasting, a fast day that I, God, would like? This is the kind of fast day I'm after, to break the chains of injustice. What I'm interested in seeing you do is sharing your food with the hungry, inviting the homeless poor into your homes, putting clothes on the shivering ill-clad, being available to your own families. If you're generous with the hungry and start giving yourselves to the down and out, your lives will begin to glow in the darkness. Your shadowed lives will be bathed in sunlight. I will always show you where to go. I will give you a full life in the emptiest of places, firm muscles, strong bones. You'll be like a well-watered garden, a gurgling spring that never runs dry. You'll use the old rubble of past lives to build the new, rebuild the foundations from out of your past. You'll be known as those who can fix anything, restore old ruins, rebuild and renovate, make the community livable again. Now, this section of the Bible, Isaiah, the 58th chapter, is one of the great chapters in the book of Isaiah, in all the Bible, really in all of human literature. And the problem was that people thought they would measure how the people of God were doing like this. Well, I fasted a long time today. I had these real deep experiences. I learned a lot. I felt a lot. I was deeply moved when we sang. In other words, they measured by what did we receive during this one little hour when we were in here? And God says, no, not at all. God measures by what did they give during the rest of the week when they were out there. Gathering together to worship and learn and have community is a real good thing to do. Your growth will be stunted without it. I hope you make a very deep commitment to do it on a regular basis. I hope that you do that for your children. But guys, here's what's critical. We do not gather for our sakes. We come to the crib to rest up and recharge and get nourished so that we can go into the world and be the church. As a church, we want to reach up to God, have a transforming relationship with Jesus. We want to enter into authentic community with each other. But we do that so that we can go out into the world so that the world, the Bay Area and beyond, can flourish. When I was in Israel not long ago, I was at the Sea of Galilee, this beautiful, life-giving lake. And then the Jordan River flows down from that into something called the Dead Sea. Why is it called the Dead Sea? Well, because it's dead. There's nothing. There's not a fish, nothing alive in it. What killed the Dead Sea? Stinginess. It always takes in. It never gives out. And we're that way. Who wants to be the Dead Sea? In other words, church isn't something that you go to in here. Church is something that you are, and I am, out there. Back when my family and I lived in Chicago, Chicago was a city with a lot of attitude. And there was a restaurant, chain of restaurants in Chicago called Ed the Bevick. Super fun place. It was a diner that kind of mirrored the attitude of the city. They had waitstaff there that was deliberately hilariously sarcastic. They would just complain about the customers the whole time long. The restaurant slogan was unforgettable. It was all over the walls. Eat and get out. Just eat and get out. Now, guys, I want to say this in just the right way. I'm so grateful we can gather. I'm so grateful we have places to do that. And we all want to be fed by God's word, to be inspired by worship, to be nourished by being all together, be loved and encouraged. But we don't do this for ourselves. We don't do this to create a safe little cocoon where we can escape from a world of hurt and need and risk and pain. The church exists for the world. The church's place is in the world. Here's the message we want to send when we gather. Everybody's welcome. Nobody's perfect. Anything's possible. Eat and get out into the world that is waiting. See, too often, Christians proclaim our faith in ways that will alienate people's hearts, and we fail to proclaim it in ways that will melt people's hearts. I read this online. A guy was being tailgated by a stressed out, angry woman on a busy street. Suddenly, the light turned yellow just in front of him, and he did the right thing. He stopped at the crosswalk, even though he could have beaten the red light by accelerating through the intersection. The tailgating woman behind him hit the roof and hit the horn, screaming in frustration as she missed her chance to go through the intersection behind him. As she was still in mid-rant, she heard a tap on her window and looked up into the face of a very serious police officer. The officer ordered her to exit her car with her hands up. He took her to the police station. She was searched, fingerprinted, photographed, and actually placed in a cell. After a couple of hours, policemen approached the cell and opened the door. She was escorted back to the booking desk where the arresting officer was waiting for her with her personal effects. And he said, lady, I'm very sorry for this mistake. So I pulled up behind your car while you were blowing your horn, flipping the guy off in front of you, and cussing a blue streak at him. I noticed the Choose Life license plates holder, the What Would Jesus Do bumper sticker, the Follow Me to Sunday School bumper sticker, and the chrome-plated Christian fish emblem on the trunk. Naturally, I assumed you had stolen the car. See, it doesn't help to have Jesus on my bumper sticker if I'm driving like the devil. It does not help to have Jesus on my bumper sticker if he's not behind the wheel of my life. And I'll tell you a little secret, guys. Living where we live in the Bay Area, we are not going to win the world for Jesus with a bunch of bumper stickers. I'll tell you another secret. Our world and the Bay Area doesn't particularly care about what happens in our crib. They don't especially care if we sing a cool song or hear a cool talk or have a cool building. As it turns out, what the world around us is waiting for is what actually matters most to God, and it's what the real church is called to. In the name of Jesus, for the love of God, feed the hungry, house the homeless, clothe the naked, care for the sick, visit the prisoner, help jobless people find work, help illiterate students learn to read, help dying people find hope, help orphans and widows, help lost people find God. So, I don't want you to come to church. I want you to be the church. I believe God has an Isaiah 58 mission for you in his world. And without it, you and I just turn into the Dead Sea. So I want to call every single one of us who is a follower of Jesus to not just come to the crib, but to identify and own the mission God has for me, for you, and the world God loves. It doesn't have to be grandiose. You know, we all can get sucked into this thing about, you know, I got to change the world. I got to show everything I'm doing. It doesn't have to impress anybody. It just has to be real. So I want to get very practical here and address how you might discover what it is that God is calling you to do in his world, your Isaiah 58 mission. And I want to do that by giving you a question to reflect on. What breaks my heart? What is it that genuinely breaks my heart? We'll get these little heart checks every once in a while. Last month, I was going to Israel for a week, and then I flew from Tel Aviv to Madrid. And then I got on a plane in Madrid to fly to Guatemala. And we were actually several hours into the trip flying over the Atlantic Ocean when the pilot came on the intercom and said we'd had a malfunction in one of the hydraulic systems. And they turned the plane around in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean and flew all the way back to Madrid. We got out, got back out in the airport at the gate where there was nobody at the gate to tell us what to do. And then we had to wait several hours for an announcement in Spanish to get on another plane to fly to Guatemala. And I was frustrated and irritated and feeling sorry for myself and thinking, man, how many stars am I going to earn for my crown in heaven by having to go through this difficult tribulation? And then next thing I know, I'm standing in a home with a mom in Guatemala. And it's one tiny room. It's a little hovel with two beds, a tin roof. It's unbearably hot. Her husband died while she was pregnant with twins, and she has nobody. She was living on the street. But there's this church that loves her in an impoverished, crime-ridden section of Guatemala. And another woman who is a cook at that church for a program they have, who has nothing, I mean nothing, she agreed to share a tiny part of a tiny little plot of land with her, like about the size of a driveway, so that this mom would have a place where she could put a roof over her children, and she was so grateful. I was thinking, anybody here ever going through a remodeling project with a kitchen or a bathroom? Do you ever get frustrated because it takes so long, costs more money than you thought it would, so difficult, such a tribulation? In this picture, you're going to see an outdoor toilet with a curtain in front of it. That's her bathroom. She shares it with 11 people. And about 5 feet away from that toilet is a little charcoal grill. That's her kitchen. That's her bathroom. That's her kitchen. It's not getting remodeled. And I'll tell you a little secret about her. She is not hoping that some Christians in America are listening to a cool talk or singing a cool song or sitting in a cool building. She's not hoping that some Christians in America find a way to live a balanced life, which is what we all feel like is the Holy Grail. She's hoping somebody's heart is breaking for her. She's hoping somebody is living Isaiah 58. She is hoping somebody is remembering that Jesus said that whatever you do for the least of these, his brothers or sisters, you're doing it for him. He is present in them. He is present in her. This is the fellowship of the broken heart, guys. This is what we're called to. Up into a transforming relationship with Jesus, entering into authentic community with each other, but then for God's sake, going out into the world that God so loved. So I want to run through a few categories of need in our world, and I'll invite you to do a little heart check today. Where do you find yourself experiencing a tug that says, I got to do something about this? And then on the screen, you'll see some ways that folks at our church are involved so you can follow up. Maybe it's education. Some of you loved schools. You loved teachers. You loved tests. You loved grades. Other students thought you were a nerdy little kid. But now God can use the spiritual gift of nerdiness. You know, we're involved with school districts and under-resourced schools. You could tutor a child. You could be part of sponsoring a classroom. That's actually how a whole ministry, the Ravenswood Education Foundation, got started through folks at our church whose heart was just breaking about education. Maybe you didn't like school and you still don't, but you have a heart for senior citizens. I don't know that a culture has ever tended to worship youth more and discard aging folks more than our culture. But we have folks involved in ministries like Safe at Home, and God could use you to be a friend to people that everybody else has forgotten that are kind of discarded. Maybe you didn't like school, and maybe you're not that crazy about old people, although you're going to be one someday, but what breaks your heart is the problem of poverty. In the 1950s, a man named Everett Swanson went to preach to soldiers serving in the Korean War. It was winter, and while he was there, some kid stole his coat. And he chased the kid, and he eventually opened the door that the kid had gone in and found this kid inside a room full of children who were freezing to death. And this kid had taken Everett's coat to keep those children alive. And Everett said, I can't close my eyes to this. It broke his heart. And that's how a ministry called Compassion International got started. And we have folks involved with AbleWorks, City Team, to help break the poverty cycle right here in the Bay Area. Maybe when you see the picture of that little hovel, you think that the problem of homeless people is something that just breaks your heart. That's what wrecked a man named Millard Fuller, and a ministry called Habitat for Humanity grew out of his broken heart. And we have a bunch of people here who would love for you to get involved in Habitat. At our Menlo Park campus, we host a group of homeless folks for a month. And not only have we had hundreds of adults help with this, but we've had a bunch of kids from our church, just children, say, I want to help too. I think you're going to see a picture of that. And I just love that, you know, God is working to build a heart for people in the hearts of our children. Maybe it's racial reconciliation that breaks your heart. This kind of killed me. A couple months ago, I spent a few days with a group of church leaders, white and black, that met together to work on this issue. And we spent a fair chunk of time just telling each other our stories. And, you know, being from my background, being Anglo, I don't think a lot about the fact that I'm white. Every single person in that room who was African American had a story to tell about the first time they heard the N-word when they were a child. And the shame and the pain and the anger and the confusion and the desolation they felt that went right down to the core of their being, every one of them. And they live here in our crib, my crib. Maybe that's what breaks your heart. When I was in Israel, we spent an evening where each member of the filming crew told their story. And it struck me every story was just a generation or two away from the Holocaust. There's such a long history of anti-Semitism in our world. And God, how that must break God's heart. One of the guys in that film crew had a family that had been in the Middle East now for 11 generations because they had been evicted from Spain during the Inquisition, and they still know that story. Maybe your heart is kind of pounding right now because you want to be a part of tearing down the wall of racism and prejudice and bigotry that has broken God's heart for centuries. We just started a partnership with AME Zion Church in Palo Alto, and you might want to check that out. Maybe you got a heart for somebody in jail or in prison. You know, prisons can be utter hellholes. When a little community of faith gets started and when it can light up the darkness, I'll get letters periodically from somebody in prison. I can always tell wherever it's from in the world because there'll be little letters and numbers on the envelope. And when God gets hold of somebody there, it can be one of the most powerful stories you can imagine. Don't wait for the perfect opportunity. Don't wait for the perfect strategy. Don't wait till you got everything figured out. Just take one step towards Isaiah 58. Volunteer, pray, read something, go on a trip, do something together with your life group. Because what you'll find is it's a lot easier for God to get involved in a life that's already in motion than in a life that's dead still, dead sea. There's a guy named Toby. He was actually ring bearer at our wedding when Nancy and I got married. And when he grew up, he went on a mission trip to Ethiopia as a high school student. While he was in Ethiopia, a 10-year-old kid, Ethiopian kid, asked Toby for his t-shirt. It was a blazing hot day. Toby is very, very fair-skinned, and he didn't have another shirt with him, and you know he couldn't get burned by the sun, so he said no. But that night, Toby couldn't sleep, just kept thinking about Jesus saying, whatever you have done for the least of these, you've done for me. And Toby started praying, and he got this idea. In Ethiopia, where there had been so much suffering, a kid would be thrilled just to get a t-shirt. We live in America. Anybody got any extra t-shirts? So Toby thought, maybe I could collect t-shirts here in America and send them over there to Africa. And he didn't know what else to do. He started going door to door asking, got any t-shirts? He called it the Give the Shirt Off Your Back campaign. And the word just spread. TV stations started carrying the story of this kid collecting t-shirts. 7-Eleven stores started putting out bins to collect t-shirts. Toby, kid that was the ring bearer at my wedding, ended up with 18,000 t-shirts. 18,000. He had to sort them out to get rid of the ones with stains or holes, the kind that your wife get rid of when you're not looking, that you've loved ever since you wore it when you were on the tennis team at college in Wheaton, but now it's gone because she put her own petty desires for neatness and fashion above your sacred memories, but I digress. Toby still had 10,000 t-shirts left. Now he had a new problem. How am I going to get them to Africa? He couldn't find a solution. The warehouse storing them for free said they had to go. And then he got a phone call from CNN. Is this Toby, the t-shirt kid? And he was told that there was a relief agency, heard about his story. They ended up having access to an Air Force jet, of all vehicles, that could take them to Africa. Because it was an Air Force jet, it was allowed to bypass customs, and it landed in an unexpected country they hadn't planned on, because it was an Air Force jet, it got through customs, got all the t-shirts there for free. Want to guess what country it was? Ethiopia, the very country where Toby had a little kid break his heart. But here's the thing. None of that would have happened if he hadn't taken a single action step. For him, it began by going on a trip and then being faced by a need and then saying no and then having his heart broken. Don't wait for a perfect opportunity. Don't wait to figure everything out. Just take a step. Just ask God to help. So how was church today? Well, we don't know yet, because it's not about what happens here inside the walls. God is tearing down the wall. Jesus gave his life to tear down the dividing wall of hostility, and that means God's plan is to have a church with no walls. We want to be that church with no walls. The most beautiful church in the world is the church that is actually in the world, in broken down neighborhoods and under-resourced hospitals and despair-filled prisons and dilapidated classrooms, where there are forgotten children and lonely seniors and at-risk babies and abused women and neglected veterans. I'm so glad you came here to the crib today. I hope it's been a great gathering. I hope that you have been encouraged and nurtured and inspired and touched by God. Now eat and get out.